All right, Shabbos, say good morning. So today's daf is Mem Dalet 44, and we are picking up on the top of Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. So our shir this morning is dedicated by Michael and Linda Elman and family in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Linda's mother, Bernice Rubin, Basha Bas Binyamin, and by Paul and Kathy Pollack in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Paul's beloved grandfather, Zechariah ben Zechariah. We hope that on the merit of our Talmud Torah, these precious neshamas will have an aliyah, and the families will experience a nechama. Shkoyach, and thank you. All right, so let's begin. Top of Mem Dalet. V'luchma b'gazla. So also remember again, we were introduced yesterday to the really interesting case of the Braisa. Remember again, the Braisa says, just to reiterate the case, machar lo bayis, machar lo sada, ein meyed lo alav, v'pnei sha'achri yuso alav. So remember again, the Braisa explained that if I went ahead and I sold someone a field, so I, the seller, do not have the ability to go ahead and testify on behalf of the purchaser, because ultimately, since I have responsibility for that field, therefore, lemaisa again, I'm nogea be'edo. So, remember again, we set up yesterday a relatively complicated case of where Reuven steals a field from Shimon. Shimon goes in and sells it to Levi. Yehuda comes along and then says that it's really my field. So the halacha is, the Gemara said that Shimon can't testify on behalf of Levi because he's in Ogea Be'edos. Why is he in Ogea Be'edos? Ultimately, again, because the Gemara set it up, he felt that he'd have an easier time getting it back from Levi than he would ultimately from getting it back from Yehuda. Okay, and then the Gemara gave another answer by Sema as well. So ask the Gemara top of Mandalat, V'lukma b'gazlan. I don't understand. Instead of going ahead and making this case so complicated, why don't you just set this case up as where the Yehuda, who is the Ma'ar Erabo, says, when he's coming to claim that the land is his, that he's coming to claim it directly from the Gazlan, directly from Reuven himself. So why go ahead and have to introduce the sale of the land to Levi? Look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Umakshinon. It's about 12 lines into the short lines of the Rashbam. Umakshinon Rav Sheshes to Okma Belokeach min Gazlan. Shalo Yoid Hanigzal Belokeach. So it was according to Rav Sheshes who set up this case. Now we're talking about someone who purchased it from the Gazlan, right? Which is the case ultimately that we were discussing, where Reuven the Gazlan goes ahead and sells it to Levi. Shelo yoyit hanigzat lelokeach. Felisni Gazlan im isalahach price kidim afarish the rosheshes lameli letana litchok atzmo lemisni machar lo bayis Gazlan lelokeach. So we'll say, again, you could have just simplified the case. Make this a case of Reuven steals from Shimon, and ultimately, again, now Yehuda shows up, tries to get it from Reuven, that, again, Shimon, the Nigzal, can't go ahead and testify on behalf of Reuven, to which the Gemara says, we'll say, back to the Gemara, Mishom, Tekaboy, Lemis, Nesefa, Machar lo para, Machar lo talis. Because we'll say, remember, since the Seifa of that price of dealt with the case of a sale, of where I'm selling to someone a cow, or selling to someone a talis, the dafka mechar the havila yeyo shishin yosha. Supposed to remember again, the second part of that price was, if I sell someone a cow, or I sell someone a talis, I can go ahead and be made. I can testify on behalf of the purchaser, to go ahead and testify to his ownership of this object, and why, says the Gemara, because I have no responsibility for the metalklin. Now the assumption over here is that's the same type of case where the object was stolen and then I could go ahead and testify on behalf of the owner. But since I have no achrayis, therefore I am not an ogea bedavar. I have no personal involvement in that particular, in that testimony. Now the reason ultimately, again, why I have no achrayis from a talton is because, remember, that would be a case of Yeush, going back to our Yeush days, Vishinu Rishus. Because we'll say, if that object was stolen from the original purchaser, then Lamais, again, we assume that when it comes to Metaltalin, it could be that the owner was Miyaish, number one, right? He despaired of ever retrieving it. And number two, there's a Shinu Rishus, there's a change in Rishus, there's a change in domain. Avalo Machar, but I will say, when there was no sale that occurred over there, the Hadrolei, where ultimately, again, if there was no sale, therefore, again, there's no Shinui Rishos, and therefore, by extension, there's no Yeush, the Gemara says, Avalomachar, the Hadrolei, lo. We're both saying, if there was no sale, and therefore it would be returned to him, then what? Then Lamaisa, again, then Lamaisa, the original seller slash owner, would not be permitted to testify on behalf of the purchaser. Therefore, Tana Resha Nami Mecher. So therefore, again, I will say, in order that the seifa has to be set up as a case of a sale, therefore the Gemara sets up the Resha, the first part of the Braisa, as a sale as well. The seifa Nami, but I will say, one second, ask the Gemara, but even in the second case of that Braisa, where we're dealing with metaltlin, movable property, Nehi demiyaish migufei midamei mimiyaish. I would say, even if you want to say that in the case of the seifa, where the metaltalin is stolen and the owner is miyaish from retrieving the object, that yeush is only on the object itself. That yeush is not upon what? The value of that object, meaning he never despairs about getting repaid for the object itself. To which the Gemara said, Lo tzricha demiskazan. I would say, this is a very interesting case. The Gemara suggests over here that the case that we're dealing with in the Seifa is where the thief died. Now what happens when the thief dies? So take a look. This is not because we learned. Hagozel Uma'achil Asbanav. We're both saying a really fascinating case. If I steal an object and I go ahead and I leave it for my children. Now look at the Rashbam for just a moment. This is pretty much like in the middle of the wide lines of the Rashbam. He says, Disnan HaGozel, Vehilchach, Meyed Delonogea Be'edusa. Okay, we'll come back to that moment, in statements in just a moment. I steal an object, Uma'achil Asbanav, the Rashbam says, Afa Pi, Shenanu Banav Atzma Minagzela Pturin, Deinu Lo Gozel Midi. So we'll say, if I steal a stolen object, and I allow my children to benefit from that object, my children obviously bear no responsibility for that. Why? Because the mice, at the end of the day, they never stole the object. Therefore, they're pturim. So, I'm sorry. Hagozom al v'heniach lifnehem. So, both say, what is heniach lifnehem? Take a look at Rashbam again. Kolomar o sheniach lifnehem gezela kayemes la'achar moso pturim dekan yuha b'yeyosh v'shinui reshus. So, both say, listen to this. So, interestingly enough, if I steal an object, and while I'm alive, I let my children use it. So my children bear no responsibility for usage of stolen property because the mice said they never stole it. Similarly, if I steal an object and die, and I leave that to my children as a Yerusha, so they have absolutely no obligation as well to go ahead and return it. Why? Remember, we learned this, so yeah. Why? Because two reasons. Number one, because the assumption is that the owner experienced Yeush. Not only is there Yeush, but there's what? There's Shinoi Rishus. There's a change of the owner. Also remember again, going back to our Yeush days a little bit, there was a discussion under what circumstances does Yeush affect a transfer of ownership. So some said Yeush by itself affected the transfer of ownership. Others explained that you needed Yeush and Shinoi Rishus. You needed literally a despair of retrieval or from retrieval, and also a change of actual domain. So the Gemara is suggesting over here that if I steal an object and then die and leave that for my children as Yerusha, there's two things that are happening over here. There's the assumed Yeush on behalf of the owner. And number two, again, there's a Shinui Rishus going from the domain of the father to the domain of the children. Those two things together create a reality in which, again, the children are not obligated to go ahead and return a stolen object. I will say, remember the exception to this rule. The exception to this rule is where everyone knows about the stolen object, right? And the object is in existence, because then there's a din of the covet of the deceased father. If everyone sees the stolen object in his possession, then you have to give it back. But we're not talking about that kind of case over here. So back to the Gemara for just a moment. So this Nana goes alamachil as banav and yachlif nei p'turim min shalim. Supposed to listen to this. So the Gemara suggests over here that Lamaisa, this could be the case of the Braisa. That the case of the Braisa is where the Gazlan died, and therefore again, because the Gazlan died, Rabbi said, therefore what? There's Yeush and Shinui Rishus, and therefore again, the Rashbam points out over here that in this case, the original owner would be permitted to go ahead and testify on behalf of the purchaser. Why? Because there's no Negios Be'edos over here. Because remember, under these circumstances, the owner of the object has nothing to gain through his Eidos. Why? Because that object, as far as he's concerned, is gone. There's been Yeush, there's been shinui rishus, and we're done. To which the Gemara says, well, if that's the case, why not set it up simpler as velukma biyoresh? So go ahead and set up this case as dealing with what? Where the object was stolen, the ganav dies, and his child inherits it. And Abbo said, let the price teach me that what? That the original owner of the object has the right to testify regarding the object, and he's not considered to be nogea be'eduso. It's not considered to be that he has a conflict of interest. Why does he have no conflict of interest? Abbo said, because once the object has been stolen, and the owner dies, and it passes as Yerusha to his son, therefore what? There's Yeush, Shinui Rishus. That object essentially is no longer under the ownership of the original owner, and therefore his testimony is not slanted or tainted at all by any kind of personal negius. To which the Gemara said, oh, and this is actually quite profound, to which the Gemara said, Hanicha leman d'amar, rishus yorish, lav ki rishus lokeach tami. We'll say, that's fine according to the opinion who says that the rishus of the inheritor is not like the rishus of the purchaser. And I'm saying, now what does this mean? Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. It's Rashbam Hanicha leman d'amar. It's probably about 20 lines up from the bottom. Last couple of words on the line. Hanicha leman d'amar, Bagozel Basra, he says like this. He says, Bagozel Basra, Allah, Tahach Mishnah, Rishus Yoresh de Gazlan, Lav Kirishus Lokeach Megazlan. So listen to this. So there's a Mishnah that discusses that one who inherits from a thief is different than one who purchases from a thief. The Gemara says, De ilu gabi lokeach, Ika Yeosh, Shinu Rishus, Vikani, De lokeach Rishus Achrisihi, Vi ilu Yoresh, Kare davua ukibirushus gazlan morisho dami velokanya beyeush greda dashinirushus laka gabi yorish. So we'll say there is a fundamental discussion in general as to what is the nature of an inheritor to what we'll call, for lack of a better term, I'll call him the principal. What do you call the person who dies?
Deceased.
The deceased. Good. Thank you. He's so condescending. All right, just a question. Hey, so what happens? So again, as I say, so there's a discussion over here, the relationship between the deceased and the yorish, the inheritor. So I say the shaila is the yorish considered to be an extension of the deceased, or is he considered to be a separate and new party? So I say would we consider the yorish, the inheritor, like a purchaser, right? Meaning, just like everybody agrees that when you purchase something from someone, you are a separate entity, or no? Is he an extension? So both say, understand. So that's the machlokis of here. V'chol heicha, I'm finishing the Rashbam. V'chol is v'chol heicha di sahajven. So both say, where does this come up for us? It comes up for us in the following situation: that if you have a person, Reuven stole from Shimon. So now the shaila is, if Reuven sells that object to another person, Reuven sells it to Levi, then it's clear that what? It's clear, we'll say, let's assume without getting into all the technicalities of Yeush, but let's assume for a moment the Metzias over here is that there was Yeush, Shimon had Yeush, and now what else do you have? You have Shinui Rishus. So we'll say, when you have Yeush and Shinui Rishus, so let's assume for our purposes today, everyone agrees that the original owner totally gives up hope of ever retrieving the object, and the object has transferred Rishus to the new purchaser. The Shaila is, in a case ultimately, again, where Reuven steals from Shimon, and then Reuven dies, and that property passes on to Reuven's child, is Reuven's inheritor considered to be like a purchaser? And therefore, again, there's a Shinui Rishus, or do we say no, that a Yoresh is just simply an extension of the deceased, and therefore, even though there may be Yeush, there's no Shinui Rishus, and because there's no Shinui Rishus, therefore what? The inheritor has not gone ahead and acquired the item. So back up to the Rashbam for just a moment. Actually, let's just finish Rashbam. And I will say, Linigzal. And therefore, I will say, if you hold that the Yoresh, that the inheritor, is not considered to be like a purchaser, meaning he's not a separate and new domain, but rather what? He is an extension of his father. Therefore, again, even if there's Yeush, there's no Shinui Rishus. V'hach Mishnah Diktani V'enyech Lifnein Peturin. Mokila, Hasan Kisha Achlam, Delo Havya Gzela Kayemes. So we'll say in that case, good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. In that case, again, I will say the only case where if you were to go ahead and hold that an inheritor is not like a purchaser, and the inheritor is an extension of his father, so let's say the only one case ultimately where you could claim that the object is totally removed from the reshus of the nigzal is where the yorish consumed it. If the object is gone, it's gone. Everyone's going to agree that's what? That the yorish will not have a responsibility to pay back the object that his father stole if the object is no longer in existence. V'ilchach p'turin, v'ilchach l'matukma, hach seifa b'yorish, l'matzi l'misni umeir. Fine, so let's go back to the Gemara. Says Gemara, I'll say the following. So remember again, the Gemara, remember, what's the Gemara's kasha? The Gemara's kasha is, why don't you set up the case of where Reuven stole from Shimon, then Reuven died, thief died, passed on the object to his yorish, to his inheritor, and why don't you tell me then that the price is coming to teach me that what? That Shimon, who is the original owner, the victim of the theft, has the right to testify regarding the object. Why? Because he's not a nogea be'edus. Why is he not nogea be'edus? Rabbi say, why? Because there was yeush and there was shinui rishus. To which the Gemara says, 1 second. Hani chalaman damar rishus yeush kilav kirishus lokeach tami. So we'll say, ella shapir ella man. So we'll say, if you hold that rishus yorish, that inheritor, is not like a purchaser. Therefore, again, what? There was no shinui rishus. Because there's no shinui rishus, therefore it makes sense the price doesn't set the case up this way. Ella man damar rishus yorish kirishus lokeach tami. My ikalameima. But we'll say, if you hold that ultimately, again, the rishus of a yorish is like the rishus of a purchaser, then what? Then Lamaisi should have set up the braisa in this way, to which the Gemara says, Va'od kashya, leila abaye. Abaye had another difficulty, which was, Vipnei shachra yuso alav, ve'in achra yuso alav. So we'll say, the lashon of the braisa was that when it comes to property, that I sold, so I do not have the ability to testify about it. Why? Because responsibility is upon me. Yet, and the second part of the braisa, so when it dealt with metaltal and movable property, it says, I can't testify regarding these objects. Why? Because ain achri yusualov. Because responsibility is not upon me. But says Gemara, I don't understand. If at the end of the day we want to talk about a case where what? The object was stolen from me, I'm the owner. And then the object was passed on to the Yoresh of the Gazlan. And then it's a discussion as to whether or not there's Yeush, or there's not Yeush, or Yeush or Shinui Rishus, then the Braisa shouldn't use the Lashon of Achri Yusa, rather what should the Braisa say? The Braisa should say, Mipneshi Chozeres Lo, Ve'eno Chozeres Lo Mi Boile. The Braisa should read Rabo say, that in the first case of the Karko, of the bias, that ultimately, again, I could go ahead and testify about it. Why? So I will say that at the end of the day, it's a shayla of whether or not the stolen object returns to the original owner or not. Meaning, it's not a din in achrayis. It's a din in what? It's a din of whether or not there's yeush and shinoi rishus in these particular circumstances. So I will say, therefore, the Gemara suggests over here that the approach of Rav Sheshes is flawed. Rav Sheshes' interpretation of our braisa is a bit problematic, and therefore that leads us to Elo Kidirabin Bar Shmuel. Rather, says the Gemara, we have to interpret the braisa in accordance to Rabin Bar Shmuel. What does Rabin Bar Shmuel say? Do Amar Rabin Bar Shmuel Mishmei De Shmuel Hamocha. So we'll say now new interpretation of the braisa. Hamocha Sadal Chaver Shelo Ba Achrayis. We'll say if I sell a field to my friend without Achrayis, Ein Meid Lo Aleha. So I'll say again, let's play this out. I'm selling a field to Reuven without Achrayis. Let's remember again, what does without Achrayis means? It means I've got creditors. If my creditor comes along, let's say again, I sell Reuven a field on the 9th of Adar. And meanwhile, again, I went ahead and I borrowed money on Zion Adar. So what happens? I sell Reuven a field, recognize that there are liens against that field. I sell without Achrayis, which means that if my Zion Adar creditor comes along and what? Wants to collect payments from me. I don't have money. He comes to collect my assets and he comes and collects the field that I sold to Reuven on the 9th of Adar. Reuven has no recourse against me. That's what it means to sell without Achrayis. Se'ein meyedlo. So we'll say, I do not have the right to go ahead and testify. Now we'll say, now let's play this out. Let's say now, Levi comes along. And Shimon comes along and he contests Reuven's ownership of that property. I, the original seller, do not have the right to go at, let me say it further. I do not have the ability to testify on behalf of Reuven. So just so we get our names right over here. I sold the field to Reuven. I myself have pre-existing creditors. But yet I sold the land to Reuven, and Reuven has no achrayas. So should the land be seized by my creditors, he has no recourse against me. Shimon comes along and challenges Reuven's ownership to the land. I want to step in over here and testify on behalf of Reuven. So the Gemara is suggesting over here that Rav Bar Shmuel is suggesting I don't have the right to do that. Why not? Why not? The Gemara says, "Mipnei shema amida bifnei bacho." Because Rabbi say, "I am an ogeya bedaver. I have a conflict of interest. I have a vested interest in this testament. What's my vested interest? I want Reuven to maintain this field." Why, Rabbi say? Because at the end of the day, it's in my best interest to. Because this way, should I not have the assets to repay my debt, then what? Then what? The creditors will come after Reuven. They'll seize Reuven's field in satisfaction of my debt. And guess what? Reuven has no achrayas against me, right? He has no recourse against me because I sold him this field without achrayas. Therefore, I will say, because of that, I am a nogeya bedavar. I have a vested interest in this testimony, and therefore I am not permitted to give it. Look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Elo kidi Rabbi Bar Shmuel. The Rashbam says, he says, Asal Hashmo Inon, Asal Hashmo Inon Reisha, Dahak Breisa, Velo Begezel Umechar Mayri, Va'af Agav Dedin Hachi Kidil Amil, Breisa La Behachi Ayri. Elo, B'mocher karka shalo, shayso mishubedes l'balchov. I will say, I sold Reuven, let's just play this out again in the Rashbam. I sold Reuven a piece of land that already had a lien against it. It was already encumbered property. U'machar lokech zeva asa inish mi'ama, v'kama arer, d'lo yoid lo ha'mocher lokech, m'shachri yuso shabal chov alov, d'mocher ligbos mikarka zeh, v'hilch ne'chalei, d'teku bi'ad lokech, d'hadr ale balchov, V'lo havi mocher rasha, v'lo yishalim. U'kenegel lokeach lo v'havi lo v'rasha, shaylo ba'achrayas mocher. V'hilchach in meid, dinogea be'edus. So suppose, so bottom line, Rav Mershmul sets it up like this, that it is because I, in this case, the seller of the property, have a vested interest in maintaining the property in the hands of Reuven the purchaser, therefore I am not permitted to go out and give testimony. To which the Gemara says, V'dafka bayis osada, but this only applies, Rabbi said, to real property. Only applies, we'll see why. Only applies to real property. Ava para vitalis lo. Rabbi said, if I went ahead and I sold a para or a talis to someone, I, the seller, do have the right to testify on behalf of the owner, to solidify the owner's part, ownership. Why? To which the Gemara says, "Vavaparis palis uta para vitalis lo mi lo mi boy." Why? To amadeis v'stama lo mishtabda le. As the boss said, at the end of the day, on a stamp para or a stamp talis, people do not normally encumber real property. So I'll say, bottom line, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is the following: the only reason that I am an ogea be'edus over here is why. Because I have these properties, I have this property that I sold pledged to an already existing debt. So because that, Rabbi said, it is in my best interest to keep this property in the hands of Reuven, because this way, again, should my creditor come along and seize the property, Reuven has no recourse against me. But Lamaisa, it's really only properties that become encumbered. Movable objects, such as a para or a talis, do not normally become encumbered for debts. Rashi says over here, bestama, before we get to Rashbam, bestama lo mishtabda. Because we'll say, in a stamp case of metaltalin, they are not encumbered to the debt. My time, what's the reason, says the Gemara? Because metaltalin inu, o metaltali lebalchov lo mishtabdi. To which Shabbos said, the Gemara expresses a principle, because a para and a talis, these are movable objects, this is movable property, and again, normally, metaltalin does not have a lien against it for debts that have been taken. Say, which is a very important yisod, which we're going to get into now a little bit, which is generally liens really only devolve upon real property. Liens generally do not devolve upon movable property. Therefore, again, Rabbi say, if I sell movable property to someone, I have the right to go ahead and testify on their behalf regarding their ownership for one simple reason. I don't have a horse in that race. Meaning, I have no vested interest in whether or not the purchaser retains his ownership over the metalton or not. Why? I got my money. I'm done. I have no achrayas. And bepashtos, there's no lien against those items as well. Because again, liens do not devolve upon movable property. Says the Gemara, va'afal gav. Now watch this. Now this is really interesting. Rabbi Osai, va'afal gav, dekasev le miglima da'al kasve. Interestingly enough, even if a person writes in a shtar, when he goes ahead when he goes ahead and he sells movable property, even if he writes in that shtar that I hereby agree to back this transaction, afilu min galimo de al kaspoi, even with the shirt off my back, nevertheless, Rabbi Osai, at the end of the day, it still doesn't create a guarantee. Hani mili de esinu beinayu. That obligation is only when what? When the objects themselves are still in existence. But if they're not in existence, then there is no obligation. But I just want to point out, before explaining that phrase, I just want to point out something very interesting, which is that lashon of afilu bin galima da'al kaspoi. We know that lashon. Why? Because that lashon is in the ksuva. That wording is in our present day ksuva. And again, I was saying the ksuva, which is essentially a note of indebtedness, right? The ksuva outlines obligations during marriage, but the more important part of the ksuva is the obligations that it outlines in the event of death or divorce. The ksuva is a unique document. Remember this from our ksuva days, in that it creates the most far-reaching lien we have in halacha. Then not only does a ksuva encumber the property that the husband presently owns, but what? It encumbers any future property that the husband will ever own. And not only does it encumber real property, but it encumbers movable property as well. Rav Shabbos is an incredible chiddush, because as we normally see over here, any type of real debt only liens really usually only devolve upon real property, not upon movable property. So it says in Rav Shabbos something amazing. So now let's go back for just a moment. So my time, I'm sorry, let me read it through now from the beginning. My time, what's the reason? Because it was at the end of the day, the par, and what was the other item? Talis, thank you, are metaltalin. And therefore, again, there's no lien against them. Even though, again, in the shtar he writes, from the shirt off my back, I'm mishtabid, says the Gemara. That's only if the objects are still in existence. Elo afilu asa apotiki namidor. Rather says the Gemara, even if the original owner of the object, let's say again, I am the original owner of the power in the talis. I borrowed money, right? So remember, it's our same case. I'm selling Ruvain the power in the talis on the 9th of Adar. Meanwhile, I borrowed money on Zayin Adar on the 7th of Adar. And also, when I borrowed money, I made the power and the talis an apotiki. What's remember apotiki? Apotiki is a contraction for two words, apo tehe koi. From here, you will collect. Which Rabbi says is another way of saying, I borrow money, I owe money, I go ahead and I create a situation where I say to the creditor, listen, I owe you the money, you're going to collect the money from this. And I identify the cow. Identify the talis. Apo tehe koi. So Rabbi says, now watch this. Now what happened? Now I sell that object. So Rabbi says, I take that power in that talis, that technically has what? A lien against it. I now sell it to Reuven. So we'll say, now the shayla is, what happens to that lien? So we'll say, this is amazing. El afilo asa potiki nami lo. We'll say, even if I went ahead and I made this object in a potiki, when I go ahead and I sell that object, that lien does not transfer. So the Gemara says, my time, makidirava, Rava, because Rava said, "Asa." So we'll say, you hear this? You hear this? This is like riveting. As if there's even a better word than riveting, right? Gold. Is that what you said? Good. I'm going to build it up a little bit more. He's a little bit more excited, right? So I say, understand. Shocking, right? Shocking. That's the word. It's shocking. Right? So why? Because listen to this. In this case, what's happening over here? Let's go with what we have so far. What we understand is, in a normal situation, what do we have? We have liens devolve upon real property. That's no chiddush. We've already known that from the beginning. And we always assume that generally, there is no lien. There are no liens against my movable property. But it's a very important yisod. Because if I borrow money, as much as a creditor, I will say, even if I borrow $1,000 from Reuven, I borrow $1 million from Reuven, let's make it interesting. I borrow $1 million from Reuven. So as I will say, even if I don't articulate anything, there isn't automatically against my real property. That's pashut. It doesn't have to be spelled out. It doesn't have to be articulated in the shtar. Now again, the one thing that can be done is what? So meaning Reuven, the lender, could release the lien. That is his right. He could say, I have no lien against your real property. But even without articulating anything, the lien is against my real property. But, on the other hand, there is automatically no lien against movable property. However, if I borrow $1 million from Reuven and Reuven says, listen, I'm placing a lien against your movable property, and he spells out what he's placing the lien against, your car, your this, your that, okay, then the lien devolves upon the movable property. But say, now here's the incredibly shocking idea, which is, now I sell that movable property to someone else, right? I sell it. But say, what happens to that lien? The Gemara suggests that that lien doesn't transfer. So I now take that movable property that was encumbered by the lien because of the debt to Reuven. I sell that property now to Shimon. That lien doesn't transfer. Why not? So the Gemara says, even if I made the movable property in Apotiki, nevertheless, the lien doesn't transfer. Why not? My time. Okay, Rava. Dama Rava. Rava said, Dama Rava, Asa Avda Apotiki Umachro. If I made my Eved an Apotiki, in other words, I borrowed money from Reuven, I made my Eved the Apotiki, the source of repayment, and then I sold the Eved, the Balchov, my creditor, has the right to go after the purchaser and reclaim the encumbered Eved that I sold as payment for his already pre-existing debt. However, Shoro v'chamora Apotiki, umachro, ein Balchov govimena. If I borrowed money from Reuven, I made my shor and my chamor the apotiki. We arranged. Reuven, you're going to collect your payments from here. Apotehekoi. I go ahead and I sell that shor and chamor to someone else. I default on the loan. I don't have money to pay. Reuven can't go to the purchaser and seize my shor and my chamor for repayment of his pre-existing debt. My time, what's this? I was is amazing. Hi islekala, v'hai leslekala. I will say for one simple reason. Because we're both saying, in order for a creditor to be able to go ahead and collect sold property for a pre-existing debt, the lien has to have a kol. The lien has to be known. So we'll say, we assume that when is there a kol? Rashi Rashbam says, I'm sorry, before we get to Rashbam, but when is there a kol? We'll say, karka has a kol. People know the status of real property. People do not know the status of movable property. So both say, remember again, because an Eved is hokish lekarkos, remember an Eved has a status of real property. Therefore, you know, both say, if I buy an Eved, I know what liens exist upon the Eved or not. And again, when I purchase it, I accept those liens. Mashek, you know, both say, movable property, people often, I don't know that someone's ox has a lien on it. He's got 25 oxen. I don't, you know, which sheep has a lien on it. Therefore, because that lien has no kol, because that sheepot has no kol, because that apotiki has no kol, therefore, what Rabbi say, it's not transferable. And because it's not transferable, ultimately, again, the balchov will have no recourse to seize the property from the purchaser. Take a look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam says, islay kol, an eved, which is karka. If it has a lien against it, it has a kol. And therefore, again, I will say, if the purchaser is not vigilant enough, then what? Then achrayus ultimately is his. On the other end, v'hal les leikala, para vitalis lo yadu alakuchos lizar v'hilchach meidlo aled de'in ma'amida b'fnei balchov. So remember, if we bring this all the way back, so this is amazing. So now, what we're seeing over here is that lamaisa again leans on movable property, even if they are explicit, are not transferable. If you sell that ultimately again to a third party, so we'll say the creditor will have no recourse to seize that movable property from the third party, even if what? Even if the creditor explicitly placed a lien upon that removable property when negotiating with the borrower. And I will say, but if we bring this full circle, remember, our point for this is, therefore, in a case like this, the original owner would have the right to be made to testify on behalf of the ownership of the purchaser. Why? Because I will say he's not no ge'e beidus, so he has no vested interest in the edus, and therefore, again, he has no, and therefore he's permitted to testify. I v'leichosh dilma akni le'metatli agav mekarkoi. Let's say, but one second, there is a way in which a lien against real property could be transferable. How about saying, if you create that lien, agav karka. Let's say, so remember again, kinyan agav means the ability to acquire metaltalin when they rest on land. Right? So literally, again, well, the truth is it doesn't have to be literal, but the idea is I could transfer ownership of movable property through the transference of ownership of real property. So you could acquire movable property on the back of real property. So I will say, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is, by the way, that could also work in terms of liens. That could work in terms of liens as well. So Rava said, that Lamaisa, again, if you go ahead and you transfer a lien on movable property through real property, then what? Then lemaisa, again, such a lien creates a sheep. In other words, we'll say, if I borrow $1 million from Reuven, and I say, Reuven, I hereby go ahead and give you a lien against all of my real property, and I also, with that real property, I'm also being maknet to you. Agof karka, on the back of the transference of the partial ownership of the lien of the real property, I also give you a lien of my movable property. We'll say, that works. That works. That creates, by the way, a transferable lien. That creates a lien that ultimately, again, will remain. To which the Gemara says, I'm sorry, let me read that. Don't rabba. We'll say, if a person transfers a lien on movable property, agov, literally on the back of the lien of real property, kani mekarkoi, then indeed, Rabbi said the creditor will acquire the lien against the real property, and he will acquire the lien against movable property from Rav Chista. And Rav Chista said, but that's only assuming vahu tekasilei deloka asmachta udilokitov say d'shtari. Rabbi said, this is amazing. This is all the lashon of the ksuva, but this is assuming that what that the creditor and borrower write in the lashon of the shtar that deloka asmachta. This is not an exaggerated statement. But lo ketov say d'shtari, this is not like a draft of documents. But I will say that sometimes one could look at that statement that I'm giving you a lien on all of my movable property on the back of my real property to be a hyperbolic statement. Therefore, I will say it has to be explicitly articulated in the shtar that there's no hyperbole here. This is meant to create a literal lien, to which the Gemara says, if that was the case, then lemaisa again, the original seller would be nogeya be'edus, right? He would have a vested interest in the testimony, and therefore lemaisa should be precluded from testifying. To which the Gemara says, what's the case over here? He goes shalakach umachar la'altar. So to which the Gemara answers, what's the case we're talking about is where he purchased movable property and he sold it immediately. In which case, Rabbi Osai, there's no concern that's what? That he borrowed money in the interim. In other words, we're talking about a case where there was a fast turnaround time. Thank you. Right? He bought it and sold it quickly. Therefore, there was no time to really get himself into any kind of lien situations. And therefore, again, we assume that the property is totally unencumbered. I belilchosh dilma diiknihu. Rabbi Osai, this is very interesting. But why are we choshesh in the following situation? Even if there was a quick turnaround time, it could be that he did the following. We'll say, you know, and we'll discuss this in greater depth, but you can go ahead and purchase property and borrow money with the following situation. I go ahead, I borrow $1 million. Say, Reuven, listen, any property that I will acquire will become encumbered by this debt. And we're going to discuss the complexities of a situation like this, but any properties that I will acquire will become encumbered by this debt. If that's the case, so let's say I borrowed money from Reuven on Monday, and you're right, I bought the property on Wednesday, and I sold it the same day. Just because it was a quick turnaround time, it could be that I already created a proactive lien on that property from the beginning. To which the owner says, Shamsa, what do you see from here? The Iknikana. So what do you see from here? You see that lemaisa, in the case, I should say the ikni, then the case where a person places a future stipulation for a lien against property, kana umachar, kana vahorish, we'll say if a person purchases that property, then sells the property, or a person purchases that property, dies, and leaves that property for his yarshim, lo mishtabit. We'll say you see from here that such a situation that like that does not create a lien. We'll say that lemaisa again, the fact that we're not choshesh to that case indicates that it does not create a real lien for the property. To which the Gemara says, Lo tzvicha, de ka amri edim, yadinon bei bahai, to lo habile arame olam. We'll say, or you could set up the case as being that with the situation of the person who sold the metalfon, we'll call him the owner, has edus, and the edim say, we saw that he never owned any land. So because he never owned any land, therefore again the ability for him to be makne, the ability for him to go ahead and create a lien against movable property agav karka becomes a simple impossibility. I have a amra papa, afagav da amra rabbanon hamocher sadul chavir shalbachrayis uba balcho v'tarfa eino chozralov nimtzes sheino shalom. I'm sorry, I should read differently. But what Papa said about say, even though the rabbi said, they will say, if I sell a field to my friend, I sell to Reuven, Shelo b'achrayis. So we'll say, Reuven has no recourse against me if the field is seized in satisfaction of my previous debt. Uba balchov v'tarfa in a chozal. So we'll say, if my creditor indeed goes to Reuven and what? Seizes the property from him, Reuven has no recourse against me. Why not? I sold him shelo b'achrayis. But however, listen to this. Nimtzeis she'ino shelo chozal. Rabbi Osai, if it turns out that's what? That's when I sold the field to Reuven. What happened, Rabbi Osai? What happened? The field was never his to sell. The field was never his to sell. I'm sorry, I should say differently. The field was never mine to sell. Thank you. I sell the field to Reuven, and it turns out the field was never mine to sell. For example, it was stolen property. Then Reuven does have recourse against it. I'll say, this is a very interesting distinction. I'm selling Reuven a field, shelo b'achrayis, no responsibility. So if my creditor comes and seizes the field, he has no recourse against it. That's what we stipulated. But if it turns out that I lied, and the field was never mine to begin with, then what? Then Reuven does have recourse against me. So we'll say, so the Gemara is suggesting over here that Lamaisa, isn't that this case over here? This is a case where it turns out that if ultimately the field was stolen from me and then ultimately the thief sells it to someone else, this is a case of Eino Shelo, therefore there should be recourse. Hachamayaskinon, I will say, what's the case over here? B'makir bashi bas chamoro. So we'll say, again, the Gemara suggests over here that in the case, ultimately again, of the metaltolin, that where there's a recognition, the person recognizes ultimately again, that literally this is the daughter of the chamor. The person recognizes that this is the offspring of the original piece of property. For Rav Zavid, Rav Zavid said, afilo nimtzeis she'eino shalo, eino chozralov. Rav Zavid said, no. That even in a case where the Maisa, again, it's recognized, Nimsi Shinishalo, where it turns out that the original property did not belong to the original seller, Eino Chozal, the purchaser still doesn't have recourse. Why? So we'll say, again, we'll end off with this answer. Rav Zavid said, no, that even in a case, Rav Zavid, this is actually quite amazing, even in a case where it turns out that Lamaisa, the property that I sold was not really mine to sell, the purchaser still doesn't have recourse against me. Why not, Rav Zavid? Because I can say, listen, this is why I sold you the property without achrayus, that you have no recourse against me for anything. Rav Zavid, I have to understand something. Right? So we're going to discuss this. Isn't that mekachtos? Meaning it's... I'm sorry?
No.
Right? Isn't that mekachtos? So we'll discuss that. But the one thing I will tell you is something very interesting, which is that when you go ahead and you purchase... I mean, why would anyone ever purchase property without achrayis? It's cheaper. Now what the chap over here is the following. Now, by the way, not only is it cheaper, but really what they're going to see is usually you bought property shel b'achrayis at a huge discount. Not only that, the Bosai, but when somebody was selling you property without achrayis, what should happen? Your antenna goes up. Because I will say, that's, as they say, zelo normali, right? Meaning that is not, there's something going on over here in that type of situation. So Rav Zavid actually takes that so far to say, as I sell Reuven property, it turns out that I sold him stolen goods. Reuven says, 1 second, I know you sold the shelo b'achrayis, but it turns out that you didn't even the owner. So Rav Zavid goes so far and said, listen, Reuven, that's what shelo b'achrayis means. Shelo b'achrayis means, you have got nothing on me. You've got nothing on me. You have no claims on me, no matter what. But same answer, we'll continue with this tomorrow. Yeah, I know, a lot of cliffhangers.
Good morning. I owe you a big hakaras atol.